You're listening to The Green, and I'm Tom Byrne. The Delaware Theater Company has a hit on its hands. Ticket sales for Because of Winn-Dixie are so strong, the Wilmington Playhouse has extended the musical's run. Because of Winn-Dixie is the first major theatrical production with a real dog on stage as a lead character, and Bill Berlone, Broadway's top animal trainer, is the man who trained the four-legged star, Bodie, a two-year-old Labradoodle. In the show, a nine-year-old girl, recently abandoned by her mother, adopts the dog after it follows her home from a Winn-Dixie grocery store, and the dog helps her adjust to life in a new town. Based on the award-winning children's book, Because of Winn-Dixie has a top-notch creative team. The music was composed by Duncan Sheik, a two-time Tony Award winner, and the story and lyrics come courtesy of Nell Benjamin, who created Legally Blonde, the musical. In our arts playlist, Delaware Public Media's Kathy Carter chats with the pair, beginning with Nell Benjamin.
Nell, the author of the book, Kate DiCamillo, has described Because of Winn-Dixie as a hymn to dogs, friendship, and the South. How did you take the book and adapt it to the theater?
Well, we all loved the book when we read it. And the funny thing is that when I was sort of first approached about doing it, I thought, well, I don't want to do a children's musical. I've done children's musicals. I'm very proud of the children's musicals that I've done. But it didn't feel like something that I thought I wanted to do. But there's something about that book. There's a lot of nuance. There's many levels going on. And some of them get quite dark. Some of the storylines are much more adult issues, which I think is why it resonates so much with adults, but also with kids who realize there's a lot going on beneath a deceptively simple book. So it stuck with me after I said, no, I don't want to do a children's musical. And I thought, well, maybe we don't have to do a children's musical of this. And I was talking to Dorothy and Bill, who championed the project. And I said, if we did something a little more ambitious that was appropriate for families, but was truthful to the dark themes in the book, how would that be? And could we get a composer that you'd never think would work on a children's book? And they said, who? And I said, I don't know. We'd never get him, but Duncan Sheik, you know, someone like that. And they went to him and he had the same reaction where he said, well, I don't want to do a children's musical. But then the book stayed with him as well. And eventually we all talked again and said, we know how to do this and we're going to try. So that, I think, was the turning point, the realizing that this book seems simple and seems child-friendly, but also addresses a lot of the drama that children can go through with families and loss and questions of faith. And we can bring those out and hopefully do in a way that's appropriate for everyone.
You mentioned Dorothy and Bill Berlone being champions of this book and, of course, the play. Give us a little bit of background.
Okay. I first worked with Bill Berlone, who is Broadway's preeminent animal trainer, on Legally Blonde, the musical, where he trained our chihuahuas, our chihuahua and our two chihuahua understudies. The story of Bill, when he was young, he wanted to be an actor, and he went up to Goodspeed to get an equity card, because Goodspeed, the opera house, had a program where if you worked, you know, did all the drudgery work in the world as an intern, one of the, I don't know, four interns would actually get an equity card. So he went up there, and the musical they were working on was the very first developmental iteration of Annie, the musical. And they hadn't planned on actually having Sandy the dog in the musical, but then they decided, no, we need the dog. So Michael Price, the artistic director, said, oh, all right, fine. Interns, the one of you that gets me the dog and trains the dog for no money will get an equity card. So Bill said, great. And he went to a local animal shelter where he clapped eyes on Sandy, the Sandy. And it changed his life. He saved the dog. Annie, of course, became the big hit that everybody knows, and this started him down that road. And then Dorothy and Bill had optioned this book because of Winn-Dixie, because they truly felt that a dog could be a leading character in a show, and that it wouldn't be a question of just tricks put in at the last minute, but that he could teach the dog to play the character and in that way show the very deep bond between people and animals. And since that's been the sort of touchstone of his life, he wanted that to be the touchstone of the show. You know, these are strong themes, and there's tremendous touching aspect to the book, but there's also a sense of bravery that the lead with this dog has the bravery to go out and confront all these issues. And I thought that was a really positive thing for us to have in the show.
The show is driven by the characters and, of course, their relationship to the lead character, which is a dog.
Yes.
How completely different is this experience from anything you've done? And what have you learned about yourself in the process?
in terms of having a lead that does not speak or act. That was a big challenge in every iteration of this, was to figure out how we give Winn-Dixie those moments without scripting them in a way, because he can't really do scripted anything. And bit by bit, we've discovered, and Bill and I have worked really closely together on this, what he can do and what those moments mean in the script. So we try not to do tricks or goofy things. The dog is not a Disney sidekick who can do magical behavior. He does just what a dog does, but he does it consistently at times in the plot that drive the plot. So, for instance, he follows her home in the beginning, and when you actually see it on stage, it seems dry to read Winn-Dixie follows her, but then when you actually see the moment and the audience all goes, oh, you know, it is quite lovely. So it has been different from anything, but incredibly rewarding in the same way. And I think the reaction that we get from the audience to see Opal and Winn-Dixie together is so worth it. It's so wonderful.
Going into this, you couldn't have known that the actor would have such a bond with the dog. And that is going to be so huge to the success of this show. Did you get very lucky with the dog that was cast?
We did. Well, you know, he is not our first Winn-Dixie. We did have a previous wonderful set of Irish wolfhounds. And what we learned, we made, again, very common sense decisions. We said we need big dogs who can read from the back of the house, and calm dogs, and it'd be great to have dogs that look like the book cover. And so we got those, and as it turned out, their very calmness and comfort on stage worked against us, because they are very big dogs, and what would happen is they get so calm that after about a week of performances, they would start lying down, which, again, fine for the scene, but then when our little tiny girl had to get them up, she had to lift sometimes physically 150 pounds worth of dog that would make a noise like, ugh. And the audience began to think, oh, does that dog not want to be there? Is she just dragging him around the stage? So Bodie, our star now, he loves to be on stage. He has a spirit to him and a desire to perform that the audience picks up on. And again, how would we ever have known that had we not tried another dog first? We wouldn't have. It's sort of funny. You learn a lot about animal nature.
And it's Nell Benjamin, writer of the book and lyrics for Because of Winn-Dixie. Now we hand things over to the guy that made the music. It's Duncan Cheek. And Duncan, you said you were instantly inspired and had a pretty clear vision of what the music should sound like for this musical based on Nell's script. How did that come to you?
When I read the book, slightly begrudgingly, because I didn't really know how my own music was going to fit into the basic framework of what I knew about this story. But when I read the book, I was really charmed by it. And I thought, you know, this place in the Florida Panhandle is not a million miles away from where I grew up. I grew up in Hilton Head, South Carolina. So there were places kind of north of me that were had an interesting set of Southern and colorful characters. And that book kind of really had that vibe. And I thought, you know, I could do something interesting where there might be some kind of exercises in genre. I mean, of course, I'm the composer, so it's still going to sound like my music. But I could kind of play with Southern rock and play with rockabilly and play with, you know, gospel and country and blues and have it be a kind of interesting movement through these different genres that kind of, you know, coalesce in the South.
There's been a lot of talk that this is a pre-Broadway show. What are your thoughts on it going to Broadway? Is it going to work for Broadway? And if it does, what is that going to mean for you?
Nobody knows what's going to work on Broadway and what's not going to work on Broadway. You know, Wicked kind of got mediocre reviews and people didn't really think it was going to happen at all. And 10 years later, it's a $5 billion entity. So, and I think, you know, things like Annie, which is maybe somewhat closer to the tenor of this show. I mean, that nobody really thought that was going to do the business either. And of course, it became this perennial kind of favorite. And even my own show, like Spring Awakening, our producers and our director, when we first did the show off-Broadway, would just say, this show is never going to go to Broadway. It's never going to work on Broadway. But, you know, sometimes they do work despite all that. And so musical theater is like this weird alchemy of things that kind of come together, and sometimes they really happen in this magical way, but you can't force it. It either happens or it doesn't. There's a fantastic team here. So there's no reason why it couldn't work, but it's totally up to the fates, you know.
You mentioned Spring Awakening, and of course, it was huge, won several Tonys. Can you take us back to the night of the Tonys when they announced Spring Awakening?
Well, yeah, I can. I was late. And my category was the first category, orchestration. So I remember like sitting down in my seat. And then I remember sort of hearing my name like somewhere in the room. And I had only written one speech because, you know, I didn't think I was going to win two Tonys. So I sort of gave my properly thought out speech for the orchestrations, which is not televised. And when we won the other one, I had nothing like intelligent to say at all. And it was just, I'm sure I was babbling and rambling, but that's okay. I was still in a pretty good mood afterwards.
Before you came to musical theater, did you have any kind of preconceived notions about it, what it might be, and that got turned on its head for you?
I was pretty bratty about musical theater. I did some musical theater as a, you know, elementary school kid, but by the time I was 12, 13, I was like, you know, I'm not doing song and dance. I'm playing guitar. It's way cooler. I'm getting my drum machine and my synthesizer. And so, you know, I went on this 20-year odyssey in the kind of normal music business, which I still, you know, it's still part of my day job. But then when, you know, after a bit of resistance to the idea of jumping into this different genre, I did think it would be interesting to try and write a score for a piece of theater where stylistically the music reflected more the stylistic tastes of the culture at large. Because musical theater, a lot of it, and even some of the greats, Stephen Sondheim et al., it's quite a niche stylistic thing. You have a certain set of people, intelligentsia and theater mavens, who idolize it, but the rest of the world doesn't really, it's not going to be their cup of tea. So my idea was kind of like, well, why can't you write a musical that, in the case of Spring Awakening, it was like, why can't you write a musical that reflects the tastes of the kind of indie rock culture that at the time I was interested in? And there were, you know, a lot of people listening to Radiohead and Bjork and that kind of music. And I thought, well, why can't that be the music that's coming out of the speakers and coming out of the singers on stage? So that was the initial conception of that idea. And, you know, since that time, now that I've been doing it for whatever, 10 or 12 years, I've come to respect and really love, you know, both contemporary theater composers and certainly all of the kind of amazing stuff that's, you know, in the canon. But it just took me a minute to expand my own my own consciousness about what I was willing to accept aesthetically.
If your contemporaries and your peers in the indie rock world or the indie rock fan were to give it a chance, they might appreciate it as well.
I think there are some things that they would totally love, yes, you know, and some things not, and that's fine. I mean, it, you know, musical theater certainly can and should cater to many different kind of demographics and psychographics, and that's all fine. But I do think it's important that there is some theater that's out there that appeals to teens and 20-somethings and 30-somethings who, you know, who listen to satellite radio and listen to Spotify and listen to pop music. It shouldn't be alienating to them.
And who is the audience for Because of Winn-Dixie?
Well, so at the risk of contradicting myself, I do think that this audience is more a kind of a young kind of preteen to teen and their parents kind of going to the theater and seeing a show about, frankly, a much beloved book. So to me, you know, I could say something very mercenary and just be like, yeah, we're trying to get the Annie kids of 2015 or the Wicked kids of, you know, 2015. But, you know, it's just, it does have a very broad appeal. You know, unlike some things I'm doing, American Psycho, for example, where, you know, you're not going to bring your 11-year-old kid to see that show. So it's been great to be able to work on things that are very, very different in tone because, you know, it keeps things interesting.
I think you're going back to a place where you mentioned earlier in the conversation that there's a space for all of this. There's a space for the indie people. There's a space for the families and something in between for the theater.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly hope that if your kind of normal indie rock person were to come to the show, I would hope that they would really respond to a lot of these songs, because there is a real sophistication that's in there. And, you know, the way we've created the sound picture, it's not a million miles away from Sufjan Stevens or Mumford & Sons in many cases. But it's just, you know, there are some things that are a little more kind of theatrical, let's just say. So, you know, we'll see if we get a few of those audience types as well.
Our thanks to Duncan Sheik and Nell Benjamin for their time this week. Because of Winn-Dixie runs through May 10th at the Delaware Theatre Company in Wilmington. For more information, visit DelawareTheatre.org. Next on The Green, Enlighten Me, and another sample from our youth media project, Generation Voice. Stay with us. This is Delaware Public Media.